God bless the USA. Yeah. Ooh, God bless the USA. Oh, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the About Last Night podcast. My name's Adam Ray. Thank you so much for listening. Happy 4th of July, America. Man, what a great country, huh? A country that gave us the Super Soaker, Danny Glover, apples to apples, Yankee Doodle candles, the 69 position, Celine Dion, water balloons, Robin Williams, silly putty, coffee. It's the greatest country on earth. Happy birthday, America. God bless the USA. I hope that's not the last time I say that, because if Trump wins, I'll say, fuck the USA, and fuck everybody who voted for that piece of shit, and made America not great again. But it's not going to happen, all right? Hillary's going to win. She's got to. Thanks for listening to the podcast, guys. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you're having a great day off today, a great 4th of July. Probably lots of BBQing going on. You really can't beat a barbecue. You know, the smell, the pool, the weather. Hopefully you got all those factors lined up and some good company. That really makes a good barbecue. You know, the food is always going to be great. Unless you got that one guy that just is like, I'll take the grill. I know how to grill. I barbecue, man. I barbecue. And then, like, everything's burnt. He puts potato salad on a bun and puts it down for some reason. He's like, it's like a new thing. It's like a bun. It's like a potato salad burger. You're like, that's not a thing, man. So I hope you had a great barbecue, or you're about to have a great barbecue. Either way, enjoy this day. Take a day off, all right? People work hard, and this day should be a celebratory, fun-filled afternoon, evening. Who knows? Some people might take it into the wee hours of Tuesday and make work on Tuesday an ordeal. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, by the way. A lot of great reviews on the last few episodes. Your iTunes reviews, your five-star comments. Thank you so much for those. If you guys haven't done so yet, go to iTunes right now where you listen to the intro. Type in About Last Night. Click on the fifth star. And then write a little comment about how you dig the pod. Helps us climb the charts. And all your emails and tweets. Appreciate all the love. So many great episodes coming up. Paul Feig next week from Ghostbusters, working on some other Ghostbusters cast members. Of course, Kevin Eastman, the co-creator of the Ninja Turtles. That episode drops Thursday. So make sure you're subscribed so that you can get all this great content and hear these amazing conversations. Today's episode, holy shit, his first podcast ever, which is hard to believe because he's been in the comedy game for a while and crushing it. Started working at Funny or Die, Will Ferrell and Adam McKay's, of course, video comedy site that started and, you know, really very guerrilla style and became one of the biggest things on the planet. He was there from the inception, then directed commercials, got a job at SNL directing digital shorts for The Lonely Island, got a few movie offers. And did 7 Days in Hell with Andy Samberg, the HBO special. And now he's directing his first comedy, blockbuster studio film that comes out July 8th. Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates with our boy Adam Devine, Zac Efron, Anna Kendrick, and Aubrey Plaza. The director who I'm talking about is the one and only Jake Zemanski, baby. Jake Zemanski crushing it, man. Brad and I got to see a screening of Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates at UCLA. Adam and Anna Kendrick were doing some college tours. I will go on record as saying it's one of the best comedies I've seen in a long time. And you're probably like, oh, you're biased. Adam's your boy. You know, I knew he was going to be great. Okay? That's just because he's hilarious and everything. So that was not a concern. The movie is so good. There are so many laugh out loud moments. The story is good. The acting is great. The relationships, the chemistry with Adam and Zach is off the charts. And it's all the stuff you want in a comedy. You want to laugh and enjoy it and have a little bit of heart. And they crushed it, man. I think Jake's going to be making a lot more movies after this. July 8th, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, theaters everywhere. Go see it. I cannot recommend it enough. We talked about so much stuff in this episode. It's quite a comedy, I mean, insight into so many aspects of comedy. I mean, directing at Funny or Die, getting that job, you know, how that site came to be, directing, co-directing with Ron Howard that SNL president sketch that Funny or Die did when they really got going was incredible. He just has amazing insight into comedy, grew up in Milwaukee. How he got his start is incredible. And, you know, just a guy that's done it all and still is just like now feeling like it's all coming together. And with his first big movie, it's crazy. It's crazy to hear how he started and where he's at now. And I met Jake at Funny or Die a long time ago when I was getting videos featured there. And it's crazy to see where he's at. He's a solid dude. Crushed his first podcast. He'll be back for sure. So enjoy the hell out of this interview because we loved having him on. Follow Jake on Twitter at Jake Zymanski. You spell that S-Z-Y-M-A-N-S-K-I. Oh, wait, no. That's how you spell his name. But his Twitter handle is S-Z-Y-Jake. There you go. All right, you shortened it. So follow Jake on Twitter at S-Z-Y-Jake. Hit him up. Let him know how much you love the podcast. And Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates coming out July 8th. Follow me on Twitter at Adam Ray Comedy. Follow Brad on Twitter at Funny Brad. Follow the podcast at ALN Podcast. Follow me on Instagram at Adam Ray 33. Follow Brad, Brad Williams Comic, ALN Podcast on Instagram as well. And, of course, get all your merch at estoymerchandise.com, E-S-T-O-Y merchandise.com, hats, shirts, mugs. Those ET mugs and posters are coming. I just got off the phone with our guy. Next week, they'll be up. So check estoymerchandise.com next week to get your posters and mugs. And come see us live. Of course, I'm in town all summer. Check my calendar, adamraytv.com, for all my in-town tour dates, Laugh Factory, Comedy Store, Improv, Ice House, haha. I'm here all summer doing Mad TV, baby. We start shooting this week, and then we premiere July 26th on the CW, 9 p.m. Tuesday night. Set that DVR! So pumped. We had another table read for the network on Friday, and it was so great, man. I'm so pumped. It's going to be great. So July 26th, 9 p.m. CW. Set your DVRs, and come see me live in town. AdamRayTV.com for all the tour dates. I got Australian on that one. Check my tour dates. Bray Williams, comedy.com for all his tour dates. Brad will be July 14th through the 17th in Columbus, Ohio at the Funny Bone. Go see him there. And then, of course, Brad will be in Montreal at the Comedy Festival up in Montreal July 20th through the 30th. Brad's there for a while, crushing it. He got a whole write-up on him out there, too. He's going to have a great festival and hopefully corral us some amazing guests. A lot of big acts out there. Of course, July 15th, Ghostbusters comes out. After you see Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, July 8th, go see Ghostbusters July 15th. Support the arts. And I think that's it. Now that we got the tour dates out of the way, that's the merch info. Those are the Twitter handles. That's the Mad TV info. And now sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only comedy director extraordinaire, Jake Zymanski.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself. It's about last night.
Wait, no, maybe I did a UCB one. God like years damn ago it. When I first started, but I don't even know if that was a podcast.
No,
some of them.
No, it was not.
Keep the illusion.
Is this for me?
It's yours, baby.
That is your water.
That's more where that came from.
Is this? Do you call this a toaster?
It's actually what it's called.
Wow, good for you. You might be the the first.
You're the only person who's ever gotten the joke. Like, everyone's like, oh, these are coasters. And
you know what? It's because someone literally 20 minutes ago said a pun to me, and I've been in a pun brain.
You've got pun brain.
Well, it's a toast-shaped coaster. Yeah. It's got to be a toaster.
Yeah. You would have been great at the game Classic Concentration. Remember that Trebek hosted back in the day?
Yeah.
Where it was like they would reveal like a piece like an eyeball and then like a cat.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you had to put
you had to
put it together. It was like
I love that
sea
stuff.
Cat.
I really did.
You know, yeah.
Oh, we did those games in school where it'd just be like images of things.
Yeah.
And try to like figure it out. Yeah, I like that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're not bringing that back. They're bringing back
Match Game.
Match Game is
with
back,
Baldwin.
Right? Should I put this on?
Yeah, baby.
Yeah. If you want to hear how silky your voice is.
Oh, boy.
Then absolutely put those headphones on.
How do you sound? You can pull that mic as close as you want.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Oh, I hear what
Ooh.
We're talking about.
Yeah,
here.
See?
Higher, lower, you good? How's that level?
No, that's pretty good.
Good,
that's,
right.
That's pretty good. It's like,
this I love how you instantly got into radio voice.
It's like acting into a mirror.
At first you was your regular speaking voice, and now you're like, and John has a dedication on Coast 103.5.
Oh, yeah. Brings back my wedding DJ days. We really
Whoa,
got to put on
what?
That mic voice. Yeah.
Wait, were you?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Did you have a DJ name? Because I was a junior high DJ.
Oh, really?
Junior high dances.
Wait. He guessed the Toast Coaster. Let's see if he can guess the dwarf DJ name.
Wait, that game show should happen. Guess the dwarf DJ name.
Wayne Brady, where are you?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So it's a dwarf-based DJ.
It's a dwarf-based DJ name.
I don't know. DJ Smalls? I don't know.
I mean,
Smalls?
Not too far off. It was DJ Fourfoot. DJ Fourfoot was my DJ name when I DJed at the illustrious Parks Junior High.
That's fantastic.
I was a junior high DJ, which was really weird because the kids would be like, this was right about when like 50 Cent Into Club was the big hit, and that's all they wanted to hear, and then I would play it, and then I would watch junior high kids dance really sexually with each other, and I was not a fan. I was like, this is weird, but I'm
really weird.
I'm causing this. Like, this is, oh.
You almost wanted.
I did this.
Yeah, and then I'm like, you know what? We're going to play something else. On the Wings of Love.
Yeah,
and
nobody can grind to that.
Yeah, yeah, you can't.
A lot of babies named DJ Fourfoot this year.
Number one baby name, overthrowing Aiden, is DJ Fourfoot.
It's so funny how, like, the music that you... Like, I was just talking about this on stage the other night, how, like, Casey and JoJo, like, for people who were in, like, 7th, 8th grade when that song came out, like, that, for girls, that might be, for a lot of them, the first time they felt a real dick on their leg. You know?
A real dick.
Like, when you hear that song, like, it makes me think of applying the dick, so, like... Who knows what song you tied to, like, receiving it. Just because that moment is so... That's a big... You know, you don't forget that.
Oh, it's a big moment. It's a big moment. Those real thin pants you had to dress up in. You're like, I've never worn pants this thin when it's, like, a dress-up dance.
Oh, God.
You're like, my penis is doing all kinds of things. I didn't know it had this much movement.
No dick control.
No,
those pants
none.
Aren't holding anything back.
And you can't stop a high school boy's erection. You can't.
Oh,
like, nothing can stop it. Not the 78-year-old math teacher. She can't stop
absolutely
it.
Absolutely not.
Because Lord
knows. You would think that even that, like, just a grotesque, like, saggy booby teacher teaching you a subject you don't care about, all those factors should contribute to no boner.
Oh, no. You can have, like, a fat man in suspenders teaching economics in high school, and you're like, fuck, I'm going to jerk off to that. Why did my dick wake up? High school is crazy.
High school is crazy, man. Wait, how do you even get into the wedding DJ world? Are you a big... Did you want to be a DJ?
Were you bat mitzvahs and you got called up to the big leagues? Or
no, I...
Is there like a DJ minor league system?
My cousin, who was cooler than me, like he went to a cooler high school than me, too. And they just had like their little pinboard in the hallway, and he saw an ad like... Hire, you know, can you drive? We'll hire you to be a wedding DJ. And then he was like, yeah, I'm going to be a DJ. And I was like, well, that sounds awesome. What do you mean you're going to be a DJ? He's like, this company's hiring DJs. And he was like a wedding DJ for like 2 or 3 months. And I was like, well, I'm in. I'm signing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I was. And it was like a weekend gig you could get, like right when you turned 16, as long as you could drive.
Yeah.
By the way, I love that the skill required to do it has nothing to do with the actual job.
No, not at all.
Can you drive?
It's like, you get to the job?
For a chef, do you know calligraphy? You know?
That's exactly what it was. And by the way, it's bad on so many levels because, one, you're driving home from these parties at 3 a.m.
Yep.
when you're 16 years old and you just got your license, which is like very like you're not
scary.
An experienced driver.
Nope. Yeah, that was
like,
my.
You don't know your limits.
That was my first car accident, was coming home from a DJ gig.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I definitely nodded off at one point and was like, oh, fuck, this is like dangerous.
Yeah.
And then I knew so little. See, they would send us out and it would always be an MC and a DJ. And the MC was really in charge, technically.
Okay. Yeah.
And the DJ would like grab the music. And I remember my first gig being, you know, at a wedding in a reception hall in some hotel, and the MC being a guy who'd been at the company a while, and he's, you know, it's going fine. He's like, this is where you plug this in. This is where CD one goes. CD two goes here. This is how we mix them. You know, it's all CD. You know, we had a big trunk of CDs.
Yeah.
And then he was like, all right, man, listen, let's play these eight songs. Play these eight songs next. I'm going to, like, go find a drink. I'll be back. And I was like, all right, cool. And, like, for me, that was, like, a very technical job. Like,
yeah.
All right, this one next. All right, looking up this one next. All right, playing this song. All of a sudden, started to get to, like, song six. Didn't see where he was. Song seven, he wasn't back. Song eight, and I'm like, oh, shit, I got to pick a song to put on. And I remember being like,
on the wings of love.
That would have been better. I remember being like, what do I play? Oh, there was a slow dance playing. It's a wedding. I should play another slow song. I don't know slow songs, because it was also, like, not necessarily, like, contemporary shit. Mm-hmm. And so I remember being like, oh God, who sings, like, music? Like, people are in love to this music. And I was just like, oh, there's a song by Stevie Wonder called God, what's this fucking, oh, now I, this is a horrible song.
Once in My Life, or
no, it's like a
Isn't
very
She Lovely.
Nope, it's a worse song than that. It has
Sunshine of My Life.
It has a title.
Okay,
this is a horrible story now. That's basically like something about I Love You. It's very
has Stevie Wonder cock blocked your story.
God, now this is a horrible story. But the point is, you put on a song that, like, if you were, like, maybe the title of the song is, like, enough of a song.
Yes.
And I actually put it on, and then, like, everyone, like, it's a lot of instrumentals. I remember being like, it wasn't
I just called to say I love you?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
There you go. And Brad saves the story.
And I'm sure it was in some fucking 90s comedy movie that I'd seen recently. And I was like, oh, I just called to say I love you. I had never actually, like, really listened to the song. Put it on. It's Stevie, like, I just called to say I love you. And then it's just like, it's just like a bunch of, like, music with not a lot of singing.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing the MC, who I hadn't seen in like 40 minutes at this point, like, pop his head back in from a bar. I think he was just, like, getting drunk in the room next door.
Yeah, of course.
Like, look at me and dash across the floor. It's like everyone's leaving the dance floor. He's like, whoa, whoa, man, what the hell did you put?
All right, turn it down.
See,
so we can.
It's not a cool song to, like, get down to on a dance floor.
So you're putting
this is exactly what I put on.
And he pops his head in.
And he pops his head in, and people are leaving the dance floor. Like, there's, like, three people left on the dance floor now. Because you don't want to fast dance to this. You don't want to slow dance to this.
No, you don't.
Just it's
there.
Horrible, actually.
Just there.
I picked it on the title. I just called to say I love you. He comes back and he's like, no, 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 man, what the fuck are you doing? He, like, flips open the CD. It was actually, like, very impressive. He's like, like, popped the CD in, mixed it out immediately, put on a song, like an upbeat song that was
put on We Are Family.
Yeah, exactly.
Celebration.
People
yeah.
start walking back out to the dance floor. It was like crisis averted. It was like the Austin Armageddon. Like, you're making an adjustment at the last second. He, like, gets some song in there, and I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. I was like, I'm getting fired. I'm so sorry. He's like, no, 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 man. Listen, it's cool. It's cool. It's cool. Listen, I was like you once.
No!
I was like you once. You show up. You think, like, Stevie Wonder's cool, man. I'm going to play some cool shit. He's like, let me tell you something. We shouldn't even have that song in CDs. Never play I Just Called to Say I Love You at a wedding. And I was like, got it. Like, didn't know. And I, as a DJ, I found out there were rules like that. There were songs you never played, songs you should play, songs that, like, we have here, trust me.
You never play Marilyn Manson for the father-daughter dance.
Never do it.
The beautiful people, the beautiful people.
I love you, Dad. And, yeah, I was like, oh, man. I know,
DJ rules. Yeah, I was going to say, like, there are, like, and those rules, I guess, or tricks of the trade just come from, I guess, people who have just DJed a while and they just pass down that.
Yeah, and then, like, they'd start to, like, I mean, this is, you're just fading one CD into another, and they start to be like, listen, man, if you do Cotton Eye Joe into Three Non-Blondes, what's going on? Like, they start to give you the tips on to, like, what
these
songs go into
really
each other.
Really go well.
You know what, though? There probably is a sign to that, because you don't notice it when you're at a wedding and you kind of, like, you go for, there's, like, three upbeat songs in a row of, like, a Bruno Mars song into a fucking, you know, another Bruno Mars song. And
watching the gears turn.
And into a, you know, SWV, I Get So Weak in the Knees, into Color Me Bad, whatever it is. But you're,
it's
like,
all planned.
And then you feel it come. And then you, in that third song, you're dancing and you're like, when you finish, you're like, all right, I'm going to go sit down. And then fucking a Boyz II Men, End of the Road comes on, you're like, or I'll slow dance.
Yeah.
Because that's what the DJ told me to do.
Take a break when you sit down. Take a break on the dance floor. Yeah, that's the key.
Oh, man.
Slow it down with your lady.
I mean, that's a DJ bumper sticker.
That's your job, is to keep the dance floor packed. And then, I mean, you guys, by the way, compliments on, you have very good, like, radio DJ voices.
Oh, thanks.
I mean, now we're each going to step up our DJ radio voice.
Because that was another thing, as, like, a kid you had to learn is, like, you're like, I don't know, I'm going to play Stevie Wonder, but then you got to learn to be like,
ladies and gentlemen, for the first time as husband and wife.
Yeah. You know, like you put that thing on and you're like trying to do a fake adult voice.
Had you had any performing background up until that point? Like to where you were comfortable on the mic at all?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it was so different. Like I feel like I'd maybe done some like comedy sports by then and like
comedy sports.
Tried to do that. Yeah.
Holy crap, man. I did comedy sports.
Oh, nice. Where?
At Sunny Hills High School. I was actually the manager of our team.
Really?
Yeah. Do you have comedy sports?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was
Seattle, yeah.
Short form improv.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was where I actually, in a comedy sports scene game, which for those of you who don't know, is kind of like a lot like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
Like those kinds of games. I actually made my mom pass out in the audience one time.
How?
Because there was a game. Do you ever play Forward Reverse?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Forward Reverse is the game where you're improvising a scene, and then at some point, the referee yells out reverse, and you have to do whatever you just did backwards. Not speaking backwards, but actions, and that you know you have to walk backwards or just play the scene backwards. So because we knew the game, there's certain tricks of it, like you do huge physical things, and that causes it to be funny when you do it in reverse. My buddy Ozzy was on my team with me. Adam, you've met Ozzy,
yep.
And him and I were both big pro wrestling fans. We even kind of practice it, and we were in this four diverse scene, and the scene was I had a bad haircut, and he had to, like, for some odd reason, he yells out, well, we got to squash this haircut. I'm like, oh, say yes. Okay, oh, sure, we got to squash the haircut. Ozzy picks me up and gives me a tombstone pile driver on the stage.
Oh, my God.
And then, like...
Yes, and...
Yeah, and then I, like, he...
Reverse!
He did it to where...
Forward!
He knew how to, like, pop me up and make it look like I just, like hit the ground so hard I didn't. And then, like, he would pop me up, then I would land lifeless.
Oh my God.
On the stage. And then I remember the referee just looking down, and he said these words. He goes, God help me, reverse. like it's Morgan Freeman giving the order to drop an atom bomb. He's like, God help me, reverse. And yeah. And then I, like, flipped my legs back up. Ozzy caught me, got me again, and then jumped and gave me another pile driver. At that point, from the audience, you just hear a, and we were like, wait, what was that? And then someone yells out, Brad, your mom just fainted.
She for real fainted
because she thought I had died. She thought she had just witnessed her son.
That, like, goes down in a freakish comedy sports history.
Right?
That's got to be one of the most famous stories of all time.
It's got to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Like, and my mom just thought, like, wow, out of all the ways, like, it's absolutely horrible to think of witnessing your kid dying, but
yeah.
During a freak accident of a comedy sports sketch.
Comedy sports is, too, is, like, the most innocent, like, non-offensive. Like, you can't get dirty there.
Yeah, yeah.
And for that to end up happening there is fantastic. So did you have, like we had, like, a high school league where I grew up. Like,
yeah.
Comedy sports. Is that what you were
We had
doing?
A high school league where we played other...
High schools.
And we're El Dorado, I'm talking shit about you, man.
Yikes.
You guys were our main rivals.
All right. Well, not...
Comedy sports rivalries run deep.
We never let them go.
Wait, so you grew up where?
Milwaukee.
Oh,
Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Which is actually, I think, at least the legend goes, why comedy sports was very popular there, and I think it was started there.
Yeah, Robin Yount actually started it.
Oh, fucking love Robin Yount.
I love Robin Yount.
Robin Yount lived in my neighborhood growing up.
Oh, my God.
And I never saw him, but...
Now you guys are having comedy boners.
We talked about teenage boners.
These are comedy boners.
They actually, like, he lived in, like, Arizona for most of the year and only lived in Milwaukee during the season.
Yeah.
And then spring training, everything was down in Arizona. And he lived, like, two or three blocks away from my house as a kid. And all the neighborhood kids would drive our bikes past.
Oh, dude, he was not only I'm sure a god in Milwaukee, but, like, a baseball superstar. So it's like, and his look, I mean... I would be willing to guess that him and Wade Boggs got fucked up, like, even in different cities, and just talked to each other over the phone and was like, how many beers can you drink tonight?
Oh, sure. And by the way, like, one of the last, like, I feel like he was in the last group of, like,
hug
baseball,
that sucker as much as you can.
Baseball superstars before they started getting paid hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yes.
When it really was just like, we travel.
Yeah.
We play ball. We love to play ball.
Dude, look at that. He looks
killer
like.
Killer stash.
Looks like Owen Wilson and Matthew McConaughey.
I mean,
Yeah. He rode his Harley around County Stadium.
Of course he
around,
did.
Around he, it when like, he celebrated the pennant win. Oh,
if Will Ferrell played a 1970s baseball player.
Dude, he really should.
He would be Robin Yount.
God, I wish Robin Yount had like crazier antics. Maybe I know. There are. We should like find them out and make the Robin Yount.
Dig. Should we dig for there? Yount?
I've got that rookie card sitting in my childhood bedroom.
I've got my Griffey one still.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, he was, you know, that was my Robin Yount.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By the way, that's the name of the Griffey biopic. That was my Robin Yount.
And everyone's like, who the fuck is Robin Yount?
But so, okay, so growing up in Milwaukee, you love what? You love sports, you love comedy.
Sports, love comedy. I miss snow out here in LA.
Dude,
I'll just
so
say
hard.
It, man.
Really?
Sure. I mean, I'm
why,
sure if
why,
I had to go
why
back
you miss
now.
It?
I just miss seasons. I miss the idea
that
like, weather
that
can
dick.
Change.
No, no, I'm that dick too. And
by the way, you know, it's kind of like the only thing, you know, 4 months of winter there and it gets real dark real early. But and it also it doesn't snow that much anymore because of global warming or whatever you're going to call it. Like I remember it used to snow by my birthday by Thanksgiving every year growing up. There'd be snow on the ground. Like that hasn't happened in like 10 years now.
I know.
But
dude.
When I was a kid growing up, you'd have these snowy nights where it's actually so bright outside when the moon shines on the snow because it's a giant reflector. And, like, it's fun going around and playing in snow at night and
yep.
shit. I don't know. Like, I have a kid now, and I'm like, oh, I wish I could bring her up in snow because that's what I remember. I think everyone has that, just they want to raise their kid how they were raised.
Yes.
Because you don't know anything else. So it'll be fine not being there, but,
right.
you know.
Yeah, it's but it's also such a, like... I don't know, like the amount of, like the snow stories I have from like seventh grade where we had a week off from school and I literally would walk over an hour to my friend's house where everybody was meeting up because he lived at the best Sled Hill area.
Yes.
And we would stay there all day and hope that it would melt a little bit so that a parent could come at least get us at the bottom of the hill because we had
yes.
to walk up this big hill and we would stay at this. And by the way, the mom never knew we were all coming over. So like 15 kids would show up and come in and she'd have to order pizza and get hot chocolate and everything. And then we'd get in their hot tub and then we end up staying the night because it wouldn't, no parents.
Going.
And we were going to walk an hour home in the dark.
No.
And like that shit was so like... Just
it, I don't. Do they even let kids do that anymore? Like
probably
thinking
not.
About it now, I'm like, that sounds insane. But you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
The only bummer about Milwaukee is they were so used to snow that their salt and plow trucks were on it, and like it would snow so often, and we'd
gone.
Rarely get
yeah.
that snow day.
Like, oh, okay.
The plows are out at 3:30 in the morning when it's snowing. Like they're making sure you get to work, you get to school. Like they were on that stuff. It started the
That's
only a- we wouldn't have snow days. We'd have cold days. Where it just got so cold. They didn't want you outside because they didn't
so
want
to
like,
call school
for how cold it was. Like, we can't do recess. We don't want
yeah.
noses getting frostbit. Like,
oh,
stay
wow.
home.
Wow. See, whereas here in Southern California, we had heat days.
Really?
When
for
it got
real?
To be like over 100 degrees, where you'd be like, half day today.
Half day.
Yeah.
Let's take it easy, guys.
Yeah. And I think that's mostly the teachers saying, I don't want to. It's too hot.
Who wants to do anything?
I don't want to do anything in this. I don't want to have. 12-year-olds just going ape shit.
Now I bet Robin Yount could have overturned some of those cold days.
Just calling like my kid's not going to school.
You know
or
what?
Just called and been like, yeah.
Robin Yount sounds like it. He'd be like a Paul Bunyan type character.
Of
like
course.
Great name.
The Grand Canyon was formed when Robin Yount hit a grounder way too hard in the Arizona sun.
Well, if MTV brings back Celebrity Deathmatch, they should pin Yount versus Bunyan.
Yount and Bunyan.
That's the worst detective duo name ever. All right, so you do comedy sports, and is that where you start to get like some of the entertainment bug?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was just like a big comedy nerd, I think, growing up. I think like a lot of us.
What'd you geek
up?
Out on?
Mm-hmm. I remember when Comedy Central first became a channel, like a cable channel,
yeah.
and that was back when it was like all they did was like have old footage of stand-ups that they
right.
like rare all the time, and so I would
they didn't have any shows,
yeah, and
so
I was,
just
super into stand-up,
yeah,
like all kinds, all different kinds of people that now that I'm like, how do I listen to all those different, you know what I mean? But like, I feel like I could listen to like Eddie Griffin and
yeah.
like Jeff Foxworthy, and I was like, thought they were both the most amazing thing ever.
It's awesome.
You know what I mean? Like,
in their heyday, they were.
And they were. Like, but I watched a lot of stand up, and I remember, like, even for like, I would like basically try to do stand up where all I would do is copy bits that I've seen, you
yes.
know what I mean? When
yeah.
you're like 13 years old.
Yeah, that's what all of us did as kids. Like, some of the kids thought I was a comedic genius because I had just watched Eddie Murphy Raw like 30
yeah.
times the weekend before, and then I came in doing those bits, and everyone was like, "What? Brad's the funniest kid
yeah,
alive!"
Yeah, exactly.
And there's no internet, and no one's really taking it upon themselves to memorize. I used to memorize the entire like all the big bits from Ace Ventura and perform them in the back of the bus to all my friends. And they were like, "You fucking, how do you memorize that?" I'm like, "Cause I just, I don't know. It's, I watched it 92 times last night."
Yeah. It's like, it really was. Yeah, pre-internet, everything was like an oral history. And like, there were like also kids who like, I remember I had that Dana Carvey HBO special memorized.
Chopping broccoli.
And yeah. I literally had all however long it was, 49 minutes, 65 minutes, I had it memorized. And that was like, it was an HBO special at the time, so we had it. Not everyone had HBO.
Yeah.
I would literally perform that entire thing word for word over like three recesses. Like, and just do it.
Oh my God.
Like, I like loved it. So funny. And
come back to the lunch tables where we will continue our performance of Chopping Broccoli.
Yeah. So there was a lot of that and doing stand-up and then comedy sports. I did a lot of comedy with my cousin, the DJ, who also at his high school had comedy sports before my high school did. He was much good, and I was like, I want to do that. This is like what we do. So we would like make little shorts and try to do stand up and do comedy shows and stuff. And
well, you said you're in a punny mood, so we may end this episode with a game of 185.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Oh, God, I haven't played that in forever.
Yeah, Adam, do you ever play that game?
No. What is that?
185 is where it's basically a pun game where you set up a joke. You say 185. Blanks walk into a bar. Bartender says either punchline or bartender says, "What do you have?" The blanks say punchline.
Oh, nice.
And the audience just yells out whatever those blanks are, and then you have to think of a joke.
I've played that forever.
And it's
always a bad pun.
Oh, it's horrible. Like, you can't make a good joke.
Wait, all right, well, give me an example right now.
Okay, so like an example is if someone says lawyers. You say, 185 lawyers walk into a bar. Bartender says, "Sorry, you can't drink here until you pass the bar exam."
Oh.
Da, 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 da. Hey!
There, well, so that there helps. Entire show on
that button helps the joke.
If you do the
it's
da,
very
da, da, da,
rapid
does.
Fire, like, you got to do it twice as fast as that, and then just do 10 bad ones in a row. And like, it's really about how fast can you get the worst joke out.
Wow. Yeah, and then and because there's so many bad ones, if there's ever a hint of a good joke, the place would just go ape shit.
All right, give me one. I want to do it.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's do a theme that you're familiar with. 185 candles.
Walk into a bar?
Yeah.
And so then I say, bartender says, "Hey, you guys don't have mouths. You can't drink in here. You're fucking candles."
I would say, 185 candles walk into a bar. Bartender says, "Sorry, you can't drink here." And the candles say, "Well, we were just trying to get enlightened."
Oh, see, that's a good one.
That's a good one.
That's one you're there's like, I wasn't thinking about it that way.
There you
all right,
go.
All right, now I see. Okay.
Okay.
Give me another one.
All right. Can you, well, do you have another candle one?
Oh, God. Yeah, no, I don't. But see, what you just start talking, you say 185 candles walk into a bar, and they say, "Sorry, we can't serve you, man." And they're like, "Come on, man, we're just trying to get our wicks wet." Like,
our wicks wet.
Yeah, our wicks wet. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah, that's kind of that kind of sounds like a porno that was on the very deep back shelves. Like,
wicks wet?
Yeah, wicks wet. All right, Adam, here we go. All right, let's do 100 in the Robin Yount theme. Let's go with 185 baseballs.
Walk into a bar.
Yeah.
Bartender says, "Sorry, we can't serve you here." And the baseballs goes, "Oh, come on. I'm just looking for Robin Yount."
Wait, what? What? I don't think
you can go 185 baseballs. Walk into a bar. Bartender says, "Sorry, we don't serve baseballs here." And baseballs say, "Ah, that's foul."
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
185 baseballs walking into a bar. Bartender says, "We can't serve you here." They say, "Are you sure?" And then he says, "You're out of here."
Okay, there we go. All right, there we go. All right, one more. Let me try one more.
And it's like,
very sloppy. None of this is good.
Okay.
They can't be good jokes. Okay, I'm looking at Kermit the Frog. So 185 frogs.
Walk into a bar. Bartender says, "Now it's always the bartender can't serve them, right?"
You can play with the joke if you want.
All right, 185 frogs walk into a bar. Bartender goes, "We can't serve you here." Frog goes, "Oh, that's bullfrog."
There you go.
Yeah, that's an acceptable 185 joke.
There you go. See, and it's just fun because it would get you thinking. And
cool.
I love bad puns.
Oh God, I haven't played that game for so long. The comedy sports game. I'm gonna tell you guys the claim I make that upsets a lot of comedy sports people. I've gotten in fights about this, but are you familiar?
Comedy sports fights.
I know. Yeah, are you familiar with the comedy sports game Beastie Rap?
No.
I think. Wait.
It started to spread.
What was Beastie Rap?
Beastie Rap is. you're up there with three people.
Yeah.
And the person who's up says the first line of a rap, and it has to be done in a way where all three yell the last word, and you have to be on the same page.
Oh, so it's like we did start, play that. Yeah.
So you start with like, you know, I met him on the corner, and his name was Brad. You start with a name. You
yeah, okay.
From the audience, you know what I mean? And then be like, I thought he was cool. I thought he was
Rad.
And then everyone yeah. says it, and you keep going.
I met his mom. I wanted to meet his dad.
Yeah, he's exactly. not good. He sure is bad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You, yeah, keep, yeah. Going you on, keep going, going on. Until you don't, not
so you fuck it up. Yeah.
When he's really happy, some within that
sad.
Means he's not sad.
Yeah, it's stuff like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, and I claim
never got to like more than three.
No.
Yeah. Like, three would be the like page. The max.
Okay.
There's yeah. always some guy who's doing it bad on purpose. Like that's his joke. Like I don't right. even get the easy one. But yeah, his teammates yeah. are really mad at him.
Yeah. yeah.
But I claim to have invented that comedy sports game.
Really?
Yeah.
And I think now you can, you know, I mean, now you're a big Hollywood director. I think that's
I'll
like
just take credit for
yeah,
it.
Just yeah. legitimize
and,
it.
But I also think it could have legitimately risen at multiple times, but it was after the Beastie Boys Intergalactic album came out.
Because it was all in the style of that.
And it was all
Don't
that style.
You tell me to smile. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've played that game now that we're talking about it. Like yeah. in Seattle. Like,
yeah.
So
I think many people started doing that after that album, and I was very deep into comedy sports at that point, and I started playing it at parties with a lot of comedy sports friends.
Yeah, but you could have like it could have started there and spread it. I'm sure comedy sports, like the people at our facility, I'm sure, like, there was probably some sort of mass email chain that was like, here's a new game you
here's
can
a
use.
New game. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, there was.
All I know is I didn't go into comedy sports and say, like, here's what a game should be, but I started playing it, like, in basements at parties with comedy sports people, and then, like,
how fun was
I
that?
Came back the next yeah. summer, and all of a sudden it was a game, and I was like, this is like my game I was doing at parties. Me and my cousin were doing, right? This wow. is a comedy sports game now?
So
awesome.
So you're like the Winklevoss twins of
yeah.
comedy sports, where fucking Zuckerberg just takes your idea yeah. and goes, oh, yeah, I'll make this. Yeah.
He's like, if you would have invented Beastie Rap, you would have invented Beastie Rap. I was like, I think I did. I don't know. Where's that movie? Yeah. Fincher, call me.
Fincher, call me.
I invented Beastie Rap. I mean,
you're a big Hollywood director. Now you could make that movie. You could walk in like, all right, coming off of the success of Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
You can make anything you want.
You make anything you want.
The
well, I'm
going to
make the true story of Beastie Rap.
And they're like, what? I'm like, it's a comedy sports game. They're like, a what game? A comedy sports, a short form improv game. It's going to be a great movie. too much explaining.
So you said when you directed like some of your shorts, that's where you got your taste and
yeah, I think I started making stuff in high school. Like I think I was the classic like, oh, for Spanish class you can make a video of
Me too.
Spanish sketches.
Yeah. Always did that.
It's always Spanish
always
class.
Always funny. Yeah.
You always got a thing. That was the way to go. Loved doing that. Mm-hmm. Had competition with my friends to make the craziest Spanish class video.
Love that.
What else did I do? I did in New York. I did the New York Film Academy when it was like a new thing.
Oh
like,
shit.
The summer after my junior year in high school, I was like, that was the big decision. It was like, all right, we saved up. I can either go to a biology camp because I was super into bio, or I can go to a film camp because I think I might be interested in that.
Two completely different worlds.
Very different worlds. Love them both.
Yeah.
Did that New York Film Academy camp. Loved it. I was like, I want to keep doing this. I want to go to film school. That's when I was like, I want to go to film school.
Yeah, and you never had a desire to be the one in front of the camera?
No, I think I was a lot in like the sketches I would make as a kid, but it was yeah. kind of because, and even now, I mean, when I was working at Funny or Die for yeah. years, I'd end up being in some of those things, but a lot of that was like, I've got this dumb idea that I can't get anyone else to be in, so I'm just
and it's just
film
easier
it.
If I do it.
It's just easier yeah. if I do it.
Is that
it,
how the
exactly.
high five thing came to be?
Yeah, that's a bit of that. That was my kind
genius.
Of, yeah.
What was the high five thing?
The high five videos?
There's yeah. this high five montage videos that me and my cousin and my buddy did for a while. There's like a crazily
they went viral
of
when
them.
Things going viral when there wasn't a ton of things
when
going
things
viral.
Could still go viral. We made a viral video.
When it,
of
it
just
was your high five video, the ladies stomping grapes and two girls one cup.
We were in the two yeah. girls one cup era.
All right,
that's a great era.
It was a great era. That was me. That was my cousin Jack Packard, we had like our group. We called it Almost Twins. The videos we made together. That was me and him. And then my buddy Bob Turton was the other guy I was high-fiving in those videos.
High-five
and
etiquette?
I put him in the no. movie Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates.
No
He's
shit.
In that movie. He's in the bar scene on the dates.
Oh, shit.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the high-five guy, Bob Turton. That's the guy in sunglasses.
That's
I mean,
amazing.
I'm pretty sure that's how he introduces himself to women. I'm the high-five guy.
For a while he did, and I know that for a fact. And that, again, is when videos could go viral and mean something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's when I first...
You know that Stomping Grapes lady was like, I'm the Stomping Grapes lady? You might want to fuck me later. She's trying to pick up dudes in bars.
Especially that damn Tay Zonday guy. He's like, You don't know who I am, but maybe you know the sound of my voice. Chocolate rain. Everyone's like,
oh. And the Stallman Graves lady is like, you already know how I come.
No.
Wait, what'd she say? Make it stop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, poor.
She's not dead.
She's still alive.
I know. She might hear this. That's when I start feeling bad about.
No, she's an internet sensation and an inspiration.
She
to,
loves it. She to wants to stop. Grapes.
Imagine being
she
that.
Fell on
so
purpose.
Many foot fetish people were watching that video.
Just like, oh, stop, make that grapes. Wine. Now moan. Yeah.
But that was the first time I think I became familiar with Jake Szymanski.
Really? And the high five video.
Yeah.
All right.
And then, but I also, you know, at that time, Funny You Die had.
Because you were uploading a lot of videos.
Yeah.
Because that's
guys,
how I know you, through your videos.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. You guys, Daryl, and I met Farah through my old manager, Tucker Voorhees at Principato.
Yep.
And I think he repped Farah, maybe yep. still does. And so he set me up with a general with him, and Mike was just the shit. Now, what, just recently promoted to CEO,
yep.
right?
CEO of Funny or Die, Mike Farah.
Farah's the man. And so you were probably, and I just have a crazy thing with faces. And so I remember like even seeing you in the office when I met with him. And then yeah. when I saw the video, I was like, oh shit, I just saw that. Like, that's amazing. And then Owen Burke, I took improv from then at UCB. And so then I met him there. And Mike was like, yeah, if you have ideas, pitch them to us, like, to try to get made. And then he was like, and I'll put you in touch with Daryl. So if you have, because yeah. I was doing a lot of my own stuff. And that was also a time when there was only a handful of comics that were really, you know, content was just so new.
Yeah.
You guys, Funny or Die, I still had just, you know, one big box and then four little boxes. So it was like, that front page was
really early days.
Prime real estate.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it was like,
the big box was just whatever Will decided to shoot that
yeah.
week.
Yeah,
and then four boxes were just wide open.
Yep. In fact, in the early days, it was just whatever got uploaded most recently, like user uploads,
wow.
would just go in the four boxes, which is how I got my job there.
Oh, maybe I don't feel so special then about getting a front page feature.
I think if you're talking about Daryl and Farah, that was a front page
okay,
feature by
okay,
that point.
Okay.
This is like, I'm talking about like the first 4 months
yeah,
or
yeah,
something
yeah.
like that.
And you guys just needed content.
We just needed content. So it's just like, and that was kind of the original idea. It was like majorly focused on user generated and then Funnier, and it still is user generated. And then Funny or Die also now, you know, makes its own stuff in-house and
yeah.
also puts that up.
That was huge too for comedy, because especially for, you know, somebody like me, like trying to get, like, you need those little, you know, validations of what
go.
You're doing. It's a place
yeah.
to go
yeah.
and it was a place to house other than YouTube, for more specific for comedy. And so when Daryl was like, send me stuff, and all like, and he would feature, I'd say, about 85% of the stuff, and sometimes he was just like too long or you missed the mark on
right,
something
right, right.
But I was like, man, the fact that I even have this in was so dope. And and so you got a job there doing...
I had uploaded a video the day they launched. I, being a comedy nerd, you know, had uploaded a video. My friend
good
told me, hey, this site launched. The story goes, the way I tell it, they launched this website. They didn't think anyone was going to see it. They were like, if anyone ever... they had no employees mm-hmm. on the creative side. They were like, if anyone ever starts coming to our website, we're going to hire people. They launched funnierdie.com in 07. With the video, The Landlord, with Will screaming
yep.
at McKay's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes viral. Hundreds of thousands of people come in day one. They didn't have the servers ready like
oh,
for, to show that video.
Did they not think it was going to...
No, they had no idea how big it would be on
well,
day one.
It, yeah, viral video wasn't,
it wasn't
a
yeah,
thing.
It,
you also don't know that. Like, anyone who... like, I hear now, like, people in the social media world or execs being like, we want a video, we want a viral video. I'm like, you can't predict. Nobody... there's no formula. I mean, like, topical and celebrity help and
yeah,
like
right.
but then
there was like, I feel like there was like like 9 months when I was working there that we hit the stage where like we knew what would go viral. There
yeah.
was like, there was that point where like videos were starting to go viral, then mm-hmm. like you kind of saw what was going viral, and then it like spread out and diluted
yeah.
from there. There was like a golden 6 months in the history of Funny or Die where I feel like we would just be like, all right, what would go crazy viral? We need like a name that sounds like this, cleavage that looks like this,
yeah.
or a celebrity that's like
yeah.
this, like, let's do it.
We, yeah.
It was like about a title and the image that would be on it and like go.
Well, my two girls, my Kermit the Frog, Two Girls, One Cup reaction video.
Yeah.
That was
big.
Yeah. And on your guys' site, it became like immortal was like the status you could get where
yeah.
it was, I don't know how many hits. Like,
so it's not dying is what you're saying.
Immortal was like, yeah, we had like, you could reach statuses on Funny or Die. Immortal was over 100,000 hits and mm-hmm. rated like 80 or 90%
right.
positive or above.
Yeah.
Like 90% funny.
Right.
Or something.
And
like
on YouTube,
that.
It was, I remember it got like, I posted it and I was like, oh, this, again, like something topical. I was like, I kept seeing all these reaction videos and I was like, what is this to? So I watched a bunch of reaction videos and then went and saw the actual video and was like, all right, well, A, that's the last time I'm going to watch that, but I need to, I think, get on this train, but I can't do a person, so
right.
what's like, you know, and then I had this Kermit puppet,
yeah.
and then I remember Perez Hilton put it on his site, and that's how it blew up
blew
on YouTube,
up.
And then I think, I was like, oh, I should probably put this on Funny or Die, But again, it's like you don't know. I even made that being like, so true. Oh, I should try to put up something right now.
It is such a weird mix of timing and da-da. The craziest one we ever did at Funny or Die, like that we tried to do on purpose, was when it was during the election, and it was when we did the McKay had the idea. John McCain was running for president and had released the ad where he used Paris Hilton. He used an image of Paris Hilton in it, and that was like news at that point. It was something about celebrity or something like that, something derogatory. And McKay's idea was to do a Paris Hilton response ad. And so he wrote a script for it. They got in touch with like Paris Hilton's people, and she was like, I'm in. Mm-hmm. And then it was like me with a camera bag by myself on a flight to New York, renting a car, driving out to the Hamptons to like shoot a Paris Hilton video. Like
just you?
Just me, no sound guy, no like that. We didn't have anything back in the early days of Funny or Die.
Oh my God.
Flew back. By the way, she was lovely. Loved the time I spent with her. She made me a turkey sandwich. She was so nice.
Wait, and by made you a turkey sandwich, like she actually made you the turkey sandwich?
Okay.
Did she go like,
of course she made no.
Turkey sandwich.
She made a very. She was a very nice, normal
turkey
person.
Sandwich for the director.
She knew about Robin Younce.
She knew about Robin Younce. I think I'm in love with her. No, and
that's awesome.
I flew back, was like editing the video on the plane because it was like topical. Got back, stayed up all night. We put it online the next day, and that was one of those things where like we had, I don't know, it was something like 5 to 10 million hits on day one. Like we were watching it. We like posted it live, and then everyone was there just going like. Refresh. And it's going up by like hundreds of thousands each time. And it was the moment we put it up, like we're like, this is gonna go. Like we knew that was like one of those things where like we gotta go to this is gonna go.
And it was so, and at that time Paris Hilton, like there was nothing, like she was just this fame phenomenon that
she was at the height of that thing.
Right.
It was like it was a crazy experience of like, oh, this is where the internet is right now.
And that must have
video is.
That must have given you guys also an indication of like, okay, like celebrity based stuff for us is like pretty maybe we can be the home to be doing that because nobody else is.
Yeah, I mean, and it started, you know, it's Will and Adam and Chris Henchy's site and, you know, Will would do stuff. And I think the other idea was like, not everyone can go do SNL every week, but there are people and celebrities who want to make funny videos and they can, I think the earliest idea was like, they can come here instead of going on Letterman and doing a thing or in conjunction with, come spend an afternoon with us, make a funny video, it'll get a ton of publicity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, for us, that gave us access to people, and for them, it gave them a cool video.
Because I looked at Funny or Die as a stand-up, it was like, oh, well, what's it going to lead to? But then it turns out it could lead to a lot. And because it was that outlet for people that gave them a chance to get their creativity out there.
Oh, it got my name into the comedy world like faster than it, because, you know, stand up, I think I was maybe 2-3 years in. So there's like having some videos featured. I mean, that's what like got me a manager, just a little bit of like, also some, you know, as I said, like you're starting out, you need some sort of validation and like mini victories. Yeah. So you're like, okay, cool. Like, I like the biggest comedy site, like I'm getting some love from that, so that's gonna keep me going another year at least, you know.
Right. And you want to have credits beyond like you've seen them in clubs and colleges all over the country, like, oh yeah, no, but
I had front page Funny or Die as credits when I go on stage for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And people were like, fucking cool, man.
Yeah, like, that was like Robin Young. Robin Young, I'm a big fan.
Thanks for coming to the haha.
That's really why I wanted to be on this thing. If you can get in touch in any way.
Did you guys target a certain amount of celebrities to like go, all right, Paris Hilton, then like, because obviously.
No, not like that. It was kind of just like, I mean, that was very organic to what was in that news cycle at the time. Like she, McCain used an image of her in a video. Let's get her to make a video back to McCain. You know what I mean? Like, so it's kind of like what's, you know, trying to stay topical in that way. I mean, that was always the best. Something that's topical, something that's surprising, something that's really, really funny, and something that's celebrity, you know?
Yeah, those are the
best. You get all those things.
Yeah, those are like the best kind of tweets, is just the fact that, and that's what makes Twitter so great, is that you get things out instantly. Something happens and you make a joke about that right then. Like, I don't know how these, like, the late night joke writers can do it now, because by the time their shit airs, that joke has already been made 40 times on Twitter by literally people who are Twitter writers.
Right, exactly.
It's,
like that,
it's insane.
That day is going. Yeah, it's gotten so fast now. Like, I remember, early days of Funny or Die, something could happen on a Monday, and we'd be like, could we get a video up to try to beat SNL on Saturday?
Yeah.
And now you're right. It's like something will happen at noon, and it'll be like people will do it on Twitter before a talk show will air that night.
Yes.
And like that, it's like so, it's gotten so compressed so fast.
Yeah.
How instant everything.
Oh, there was a big thing. I did a video I did for Brett Favre Dickholes Jeans. I don't know if you ever remember that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I put it up, and you guys put it on the front page on, I think, like a Tuesday, right? And I knew, again, like, I was like, this. All that scandal was going on, and I was like, it's something, like, he's just so in the news right now.
Yeah.
And the Wrangler jeans things were all the time, and so, and then SNL that Saturday did almost shot for shot, like, with Sudeikis as Favre, that commercial, and
What was the idea? I don't remember that.
So it was basically, it was a Wrangler jeans commercial, and so guys playing football and everything, and then Favre talking to camera being like, you know, but I'm always, you know, I love playing football with the guys and like wearing my jeans, but like I need a little extra room to breathe when I'm running around or whatever. So I got, you know, Brett Favre dickhole jeans. So like the jeans that are comfy.
But wait, they actually did dickhole jeans? Exact same as yours?
They didn't call it dickhole. It was like,
I remember yours.
It was theirs was called like, I don't know.
Penis out.
I mean, it was very close. And so all of a sudden, I get just a million texts. Like, I'm getting tagged in all these things. There's all these weird sites start, like, putting the videos up. And, like, SNL rips off again. And I'm taking the high road, and I still will. Because, like, it was a good idea. It wasn't I wouldn't put it past, especially people at SNL, to not think of the same thing, you know?
Sure.
So, but, you know, they had
some... Well, by the way, I was also... Because I worked at SNL for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. That was after Funny or Die, right?
That was after Funny or Die.
Yeah, it led to that.
SNL. And by the way, coming out of that internet world where... It was day by day, hour by hour, and this idea, and part of your job is watching everything that goes online.
Yeah.
I remember going to SNL and thinking like, oh, yeah, there's been some sketches that they've done after it's been out online.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, 9 times out of 10, they have no idea that
that's
happened.
And, totally.
And by the way, because they're working so hard there, so many hours, and it's so insular. You're on that floor.
Isolated.
Doors are closed. You're working very hard on ideas. You're talking about what's in the news. Like, there's not time to go watch.
Yeah, you're not like, oh,
online.
Let's go on Funny or Die and let's see what.
So I realize,
let's see what they're doing.
Every now and then SNL will get a, like, you know, someone be like, there's a scandal, they stole this idea, and after being there, I truly believe like no one's trying to steal it.
Yep.
Also, if someone knew that idea existed, they wouldn't put it on the show.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone's trying to do that at SNL.
There's an integrity there.
Absolutely,
sure.
It's just comedy people trying to work on comedy.
Hey, there's a lot of funny people in the world. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure Richard Pryor thought of some bits that fucking, you know, Cosby thought of.
Sure.
With,
but by the way, at
cursing.
The same time, when you make an internet video and it's doing great and it goes out there, and then you see a more highly produced one on a TV show like 5 days later, that sucks. That feeling sucks.
Yeah.
It's not on purpose that it happened, but like that's a real like, hey, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I did that with my iPhone, and they have they have Paul Simon doing the soundtrack. That's awful.
I want to hear about SNL, but real quick, just to finish on Funny or Die, were you involved in the presidential sketch with like Jim Carrey?
Oh yeah, I co-directed that.
Shut the fuck up.
Jim Carrey.
Me and Ron Howard directed that.
Whoa, dude.
That's how I got to know Ron Howard. He's the best. It was basically like, I mean, that was a dream come true to get all the SNL.
That was one of the most incredible videos ever.
Yeah.
And by that point, it was like the most money Funny or Die had ever spent to put a sketch together. We'd never spent that much money. It still wasn't like a crazy amount like by TV standards. But like, yeah, that was amazing. That was another one that like McKay did a writing pass. I think James L. Brooks did a writing pass. It was like comedy titans getting together to say, let's try to put all the SNL ex-presidents together.
So that was like the comedy version of We Are the World.
Yeah.
Pretty much,
that was
dude.
Everyone coming in and
it's
be like, let's all put our own spin on it.
By the way, like, yeah, and like, we got Ron to say he'd be involved directing it, and he was really busy with other stuff, obviously.
Because
he's Ron Howard. So it's kind of like I had to go meet with him, and we talked about it, and then I had to go set everything up and make everything ready for the sketch. And then he, you know, it was like one of the coolest experiences of my life. Not only getting to work with Ron, and he was so great and the nicest guy. And,
give you advice and stuff?
Oh, yeah. It was great talking to him. But then also, we show up to this stage in the Valley, you know what I mean? And you've got Chevy Chase walking in, Dan Aykroyd walking in, Dana Carvey, who, as I said, I had
Chopping
his entire
broccoli.
Special memorized as a child.
He's like a god.
And then I'm doing like bits with him, throwing out like, what if you do your 1,000 points of light thing here and do this thing here? Because I'm like, because I know your act so well. Do this.
I was
like,
born
and
for
it
this.
Was just like, but just watching these guys go was like, oh, so fun.
Were you at all I mean, how much directing experience did you have prior to this? Like, were you comfortable? Or,
I don't know.
Like,
this was
entirely?
Maybe like a year and a half into Funny or Die, 2 years into Funny or Die.
Okay,
I mean, the
now
one
you're
great
directing
thing,
like five of the funniest people.
Yeah, and by the way, I did not do a ton of directing those people. They all know what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Sure.
This is like, let's make sure we get the shots. And by the way, Ron Howard was there directing.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So I was part of that process.
But still just to be there. Like,
yeah,
hell,
be in the
I
room.
Would have paid money to be in the room.
But those guys are so pro, I feel like, that if you were to come up and be like, Jim, I think if you whatever, they will be receptive because you're in the brand, you're there with Ron, you're a part of the process, so they're going to be like, oh, this guy probably knows what he's doing if he's here.
Yeah, probably. By the way, like, I'm sure they did. I'm sure, like, probably some people didn't even know I was there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, Dan Aykroyd probably doesn't know I was even in that room. Like, Dana Carvey, I got to, like, talk to and give a joke or two to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, Will, obviously, I'd been working with Will at Fire Die. He was there, so he was great always. But, yeah, like, for me, I was like, oh, if I can like get three jokes in here and like five good ideas, this is amazing. You know, like the coolest part was just seeing those guys like Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd in between takes, just like talk, like catching up, like overhearing, like, you want to come over for the game this weekend? Or it's been a while. We haven't hung out. Like, and
you forget
like,
that they just
this
don't.
Is amazing. They're just dudes.
It's not
a
big
together
comedy like hangout every like they don't. It's like those guys lose touch just like anybody, and they
right.
like
yeah well,
it's
exactly.
A, yeah, it's the same reason why we love going to comedy festivals because then we're actually there with all these headliners that
all the guys
we
you came
never
up with
see.
You don't see anymore because
we're all
because
we're all now so fucking rich.
Yeah,
that we just like.
Obviously.
We just hang out in our mansions
money's
all day.
You're
and
separated literally by piles of money.
Yeah.
You can't see the other
right.
people.
We just snort caviar off of hookers. I mean, it's really hard to, like, you know, just get back to basics at that point.
Yeah.
Was did anybody improvise anything that day that was like, or did somebody do something that everybody, like, collectively laughed at that was like, oh, man, like.
God, I'm trying to remember specifics. It's such a blur. Like, I was so on cloud nine during all of that. It's all, yeah. Well, Dana Carvey did a lot of improvisation.
Yeah.
I remember because there was a sequence in it where Fred Armisen plays Obama and he's having a dream.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this weird, like, on white kind of dreamy look of all the presidents talking to him. And we let Dana Carvey just go. We just, like, hit record and he was, you know, he's doing his little, hey there, Obama. And, like, and he just started riffing. And it was like the hardest I had laughed in years. And part of that was just, like, little Jake wish fulfillment coming through.
Yes, sure.
Do that. But he, I mean, everyone riffed a little bit. I mean, I remember, you know, Jim Carrey doing Reagan in that. He's got the bit where his balls are swinging in his pants.
Yeah.
Like, that was all Jim Carrey. He's like, I want to get fake balls and I want to do this joke. Like, that wasn't in the script. Like, he was
I
like,
love
I want
that
to do
demand.
Somebody get Jim Carrey fake balls.
Yeah. Like, so, like, no, they all.
What do you mean props doesn't have fake balls?
Yeah.
Jim Carrey's on this set. Yeah. God damn it. You'll have the fake balls ready. Get this man some old testicles.
So then
everyone's doing that. I mean, it was just amazing.
So from that, that's so dope that you got to be a part of that. So does that lead into, I mean, like, Between Two Ferns and Drunk History, I think, can also be talked about
Funny
as...
Funny or Die classics.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
and I had nothing to do with those.
Okay.
Like, except for sometimes, again, get to be on that set and, like, hold a camera or so. Because it was so... The thing about Funny or Die is those first couple of years, it was so guerrilla. It was so run and gun that it really was everyone did a little bit of everything. That's how I got the job there, is those guys saw a video I made and they were like... Oh, you made the video? I was like, yeah. They're like, oh, we thought you were an actor. I was like, I'm not an actor. I don't have a headshot. I don't audition. They're like, oh, but you were in it. I'm like, yeah, because I can't get anyone else to be in these dumb videos. And they're like, oh, do you know how to use a computer? I'm like, what do you mean? Like, did you edit it? I'm like, yeah, I edited it. They're like, oh, man, you got to work here. Like, it was literally like, do you know how to, like, do stuff? Because we don't have anyone doing this stuff.
Yeah, right.
And so, I mean, the first couple months of Funny or Die, we didn't own lights. We didn't own microphones. It was literally just holding a camera guerrilla style. Then we slowly, like, we got a mic. Then we got, like, one light. Then we got two lights. And, like, it really built up from that. But it started with... Hey, one day there's a shoot. There's something I wrote that I'm going to direct. The next day, I'm going to go hold a boom mic for someone else. The next day, I'm like trying to help someone set up a camera, and I'll be there in the beginning, and then I'll leave. Like, it was really like there were three or four employees the first couple months, and we just did
Unreal.
Everything. You know?
And then you slowly. I mean, then the
how does SNL happen? Like, how does that?
The SNL happened actually because of some commercials I directed.
Oh, and really? So not even Funny or Die?
Not even Funny or Die. In fact, I feel like I has been doing Funny or Die stuff, but again, it was kind of guerrilla style, and I feel like the SNL people were maybe like, we need people who can do higher quality stuff than that. I think my manager said at one point, like, yeah, we tried to bring you up for Funny or Die. And unfortunately, you know, Jake, they're just not, you know, we've had the Jake conversation with him, and we just don't think it's going to happen. My manager said that to me. And then I shot a commercial in which I met Bill Hader and John Mulaney.
Nice.
Bill Hader was starring in these commercials for Volkswagen. I went and directed.
Yep.
And he brought John Mulaney along to write on those. So I got to work with those guys. And we got along pretty good. And I think they were like, oh, you're not like a normal commercial guy. They saw the edits when they first came out. They saw the rough cuts, and they're like, oh, you cut these for comedy. And I was like, yeah, that's like, I'm a comedy guy. And they're like, oh, yeah, these are funny, like for commercials. Sometimes you get a commercial director who it's not about the comedy. It's
no,
about
right.
Stuff like that.
It's about getting the best shot of the mayonnaise.
Yeah, and then we were just on set towards the end of it, and literally Mulaney was just like, hey, I think we are losing our director. We got an open spot. Would you want to come, like, guest direct a couple things?
So
and I was
cool.
Like, yeah, what are you kidding me? That's yeah. Like a dream come true. He's like, I'll mention your name. And so and next thing I knew, I flew out for the end of that season and was like doing that. And then I went back next season and did digital shorts with Andy.
Shut up.
And did Cut 2, stuff like that. But it was – the best part was I think my managers knew like a spot was opening there. And I love my managers, by the way. And they were like, sorry, we tried. It's not going to happen. And then I was like, hey, they said you might expect a call. They recommended me for this thing. They're like, Jake, we told you. We tried. Mm-hmm. They called me back the next day. Like, so the conversation has changed. they called. They'd like to see a reel. We'd like to try to. And then I ended up working there for 2 seasons.
What digital shorts did you jam on?
I did some of the last ones because I was there like the last 2 seasons that Andy was there.
Yeah.
I was there. Mm-hmm. And I shared an office with Sandberg, which is how I know him.
Amazing.
And,
so what? Was that the Captain Jack Sparrow one with Michael Bolton?
They were doing that one like right when I got there.
Oh,
like,
okay.
I didn't work, and I didn't do all of them with him because, you know, Akiva and Yorma had left by that point, but they would come back to do like the music one still. But
yeah.
It was really cool. I got to work on the 100th digital short, the one that was like the mega montage.
Yeah, dude, that was incredible.
I did a lot of work on that. Yorma and I co-directed that and helped do some of the song, the song for that one, and the Lazy Sunday 2 I was around on. And what else did we do? We did one with Jonah Hill where he kept getting hit in the nuts by a tennis ball.
Yeah. The process of the digital shorts, I mean, I'm very curious, like, how quickly do they come together from inception to getting shot? Because it...
Well, they really... You know, it's interesting because the schedule of SNL, which everyone obviously talks about, like, Tuesday night is kind of writing night, but it's writing night for the live show, really. And so I know Andy... and by the way, by the time I got there, I hadn't done any of the work. Like, The Lonely Island was already established.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was already de facto that Andy could do a digital short every week, and he didn't have to bring it to the table to read it. It was just, like, whatever he wanted to do. You know,
gotcha.
He didn't have to get approved. It would be like, Lauren wanted a digital short every week, so whatever Andy wanted to make, you know, we could try to make. And so I think a lot of times we'd wait until, like, Thursday or Wednesday to see what got picked. And then it was like, oh, how much of the live show is Andy in? How much time does he have? What idea can we try? And Andy had a lot of ideas, you know, kind of built up that he wanted to try to do. But a lot of it was like writing Wednesday night, Thursday, and then you're prepping it Thursday night to shoot on Friday, very last second.
Wow.
And then you shoot Friday, you edit, you stay up all night and edit to put on Saturday.
Jesus.
Oh, God.
So if you're on the video, like everyone who works there doesn't sleep. Tuesday night, the writing night.
Yeah.
But if you work on like the digital short crew there, if you're on the video crew, you don't sleep Tuesday night. You also don't get a lot of sleep Wednesday night when you're trying to come up with the idea to do.
Mm-hmm.
You get almost no sleep Thursday night because you're trying to prep a last second shoot for Friday. You get a couple hours, and then you also don't sleep Friday night because you're up all night editing.
Yeah.
So like you are, on the video crew, you can end up not sleeping 3 or 4 nights a week.
And you're like, let's go to the party. After the show, you're like, no.
Yeah, so you can
I'm going
really,
to my bed.
When they do shows, you know, when you're on the third week in a row of
yeah.
the show, you're kind of a zombie by the end of that.
Oh, my God. That is, so then that's your relationship with Sandberg. That's how the 7 Days in Hell
yes,
comes
that's
about.
Yes, 7 Days
yeah,
in Hell.
Yeah, just rewatch that. I fucking love it.
Oh,
I'm a big tennis guy, and it's like the parody of that world that is like just never been done. And I love, you know, fake documentaries and sports. Like,
oh, yeah. We really wanted to do, like, the idea of, like, 30 for 30 was just getting really popular and, like, being like, let's do the joke version of that. And,
right.
Murray Miller, who wrote it, and Andy are old friends, and they already had this idea of wanting to do something in the tennis world.
Well, because the
crazy script.
The tennis world is so ripe for parody because it's taken so seriously. Like, you go... Like, you go to Wimbledon, and it's like, all right, all the people must wear white. You know, all the people have to shut up, you know. And tennis players in general are kind of reserved. Like, obviously, like, the most famous one, maybe McEnroe, and the reason why he's famous is because he would have these outbursts. But then at the same time, you watch the outbursts, like, now, as comparison to what athletes do nowadays, you're like, that's nothing. That is literally nothing as opposed to what athletes are doing today.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, so it's crazy that McEnroe totally was known as the bad boy of sports compared to like what's happening today.
Didn't
Aaron Hernandez just get sentenced for murder?
Exactly. Like, no, that title's been passed now.
There's a new McEnroe in town.
Exactly.
And I knew I didn't really watch tennis growing up. So when we made 7 Days in Hell, I kept I didn't know a ton about tennis. I had to learn quickly and watch a lot of old tennis footage. But I would do
so much samples.
We were on set, and I would keep calling it the field. Like, we're running here on the field. Call this, and it's the court, Jake. I can't say the field. I have to say the court. Okay, sorry.
You're
I don't
that
know
girl
tennis.
That's trying to watch sports with her boyfriend, and so when does the quarterback hit a home run?
I was back for tennis, and thank you for letting me direct this. I'm really trying to catch up here.
Did he just straight up ask you? I mean, is that a thing where you gotta?
I mean, I'm sure he asked Akiva and Yorma first, and then they couldn't do it, and then he asked me. But it was a blast. Yeah, I think it was literally hey, we were trying to do this thing. I think Akiva was involved for a second first, and then he couldn't do it. Because there was already, we've already started trying to figure out how to do it. We were thinking this. And they brought me on, and it was just crazy because, first of all, HBO normally doesn't do something like that.
Yeah,
like
that, that was a big deal.
Big kudos to them for doing it. But we also, we're ambitious. We tried to do something way bigger than the budget we had. I think we had a budget for a 20-minute TV show type thing.
Yeah.
And we're we want to make an hour-long fake documentary that all takes place in the early 90s. And we just tried to do it. We just really stretched every dollar. So we did that. And that's actually where my Funny or Die experience came in handy, because we basically did all of 7 Days in Hell kind of like a Funny or Die shoot. Barely any crafty, lots of PAs and kids helping. We shot that whole thing in 4 days.
Shut up.
Really?
It was nuts.
Well, there's so many talking head interviews, and then...
Well, and not to be fair, not all the talking heads were in that 4 days, because some of those were just whenever they came up and were available, we'd go get them.
Okay. Sure.
But everything else was in that 4 days.
Where did you shoot the court, the tennis stuff?
We found a grass court. It had to be grass for Wimbledon. Mm-hmm. Another thing I learned.
Yeah.
It's
Wimbledon, by the way?
Oh, sure, sure, sure. I'm sure it is. And we found a grass court in Palm Springs.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And we built a fake three walls of Wimbledon around it, and digitally did the rest. Mm-hmm. And the reason the court in Palm Springs was available was because it was so hot. It was 120 degrees. We shot it almost exactly 2 years ago, in June or July. It was so hot that they shut down the tennis courts during those weeks, because they don't let people play because it's dangerous.
Yeah,
and we were can we rent it to play fake tennis on? They're like, yeah, go ahead. So then we just got our actors. We didn't tell our actors.
Okay.
And then
it was going to be 120 degrees.
That this is so hot they don't let people play tennis on this court.
Yeah.
And then we just made them play tennis.
Is that why Howie Mandel was legitimately really profusely sweating?
Oh, I think
sweating.
We had extras pass out who from just sitting in the stands.
Shit.
That's how hot it was. We had to keep everyone hydrated, and so our takes were never more than 2 minutes long, 3 minutes long, and then you'd have to take a 10-minute break and cool down with ice water, things, everything over your neck and head, and just bring your body temp down, and then try to go again for another 30 seconds, and
so
then stop for 10 minutes, and then try to go again for another 2 minutes.
Oh my
God. The person who had it the best was the damn streaker.
Yes, the wanted to take.
That was incredible. I mean, that was one of my favorite moments I've seen in anything in a long time, because it's such
so much fun doing that. We didn't have permission. We didn't know if they would kick us out for that. This was such a ragtag shoot. We didn't even have a streaker cast until maybe the day before. We still hadn't found someone, but it was in the script. That's how thrown together this thing was. And we're like, I don't think the hotel gave us permission to do this.
There will be no free exposed titties without permission and waiver signed.
And then it was should we ask? And it was well, if we ask, they can say no. They know we're shooting stuff. So that was literally
not
the
permission.
That was the last thing we shot, because we were worried they were going to kick us out.
Wow.
So the streaker bit was the last bit. We didn't even tell all of our extras in the stands. Because we were
so they saw that on fold with the dude and then
just
her
real
and then,
reactions.
Dude, when he brings them both together, I mean, hey, when he's going out,
kiss?
When makes them kiss, his face, and then I think
that
it
was my Wild Things moment that I wanted to add to that.
Dude,
I was we have to do a Wild Things where you make them kiss.
Bravo.
Yeah,
that was incredible.
Good reference.
So funny.
So then where does Mike and Dave get? Come into your world.
Mike and Dave was actually just a script I read cold that I really, really liked. And it was so funny to me. I was actually working on another movie before Mike and Dave that it kind of fell apart at the last second. I was in Atlanta prepping it, and the plug got pulled. And I came back to LA, and I was like, man, I thought I was going to get to make this movie. And then, you know, my agents and managers were like, well, try to read these scripts. Let's get back on the horse. And I was kind of like, oh, man, I'm so bummed. All my energy was in this other thing. And so it took me a while to, like, start reading scripts. And, you know, I mean, you've read scripts. It's like some of these comedy scripts, like, if they're not – everyone has different opinions on comedy. Yep. So I can read a lot of stuff and be like, I don't think this is funny.
Yeah,
I don't
know sure. This. And with comedy, it's so subjective, and there's a lot – and the timing is so important that if you're not – reading it the way supposed to be read, shot, whatever, then you could miss the joke.
And I've read stuff that I've gone, this isn't funny. And then I'll see it get made and I'll go, oh, they had the idea to do it like that and they read it like that and that's not how I was picturing it. And that is funny. And good thing I didn't do that. That was not my thing.
Right.
And then Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. I remember, and by the way, I feel like this is a fair reaction to have because I was like, the title, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. So I was like, there's a real question mark here. That title can go either way. Yeah. Either I love it, it's awesome, or it's a little too simple, a little too dumb.
Yeah.
And then just started reading it, and I was like, oh, these kind of jokes. Oh, this is right up my alley. I was very into this. I was like, oh, this is actually funny. Yeah. That was like what I said to my manager. I was like, hey, this one's really funny. And he's like, I know. That's why I've been trying to get you to read it.
And so at what point do you also get into that world where you are, is it after 7 Days in Hell or prior to that when you are at a place where scripts are coming in and you're at a position to go where they're like, yo, you're now in the directing world to be able to, if you want to do this, we can make it happen.
I don't know how the business works, man. I really do. I mean,
I know it's a loaded question.
I show up, I eat a ham sandwich, and then
my God, I smile. I say, would you let me make this joke? Sometimes they say yes. Sometimes they say, I mean, I think like you can always try to read a script and do your pitch on it, but like the hard part is so your agents and managers can get you scripts. These are going around, these are looking for directors. Mm-hmm. And then you can read them. You can go like, oh, I'd like this one. Could I meet on this one? And then it's whether you can get that meeting or not to kind of give your pitch to
them. Yeah, gotcha.
And this one, you know, like I said, I had been attached to this other movie that the plug got pulled. It was a heartbreaker. So it was kind of like, oh, maybe this guy can direct. He was going to go direct this other thing.
Right. So you had some clout from that.
Yeah, and obviously working
with Zach already.
Zach and I had a, you know, pretty – and SNL. This is like, oh, this is a director from SNL. That goes a long way.
It does.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Funny or Die, too, I'm sure.
And Funny or Die, yeah, and some of the shorts I had made, you know, like a good
Zac
calling card.
Zac Efron's pool party.
Yeah.
Yes, Zac Efron's
amazing.
Pool. Yeah, and I mean, also, that, by the way, sidetrack, but that was the great thing about Funny or Die is just the access you had to people. Like,
sure.
I don't know another time I'll get to work with Academy Award winner Marion Cotillard and put fake boobs on her head and make a comedy sketch about it. But, like, that's what Funny or Die was.
Attitude.
It was access to get to work with really great stars who are super talented and super funny. And anywhere it's hard to get that. So that was great. And, like, I think that's where I also – I got comfortable on set, comfortable talking to big comedians, big actors. It's because on Funny or Die, we had to do it 3 times a week. You know what I mean? And on a good week.
Yeah.
Quick question about that. Was there, because you bring up Marilyn Cotillard. I can't say her name. She's French.
You don't know who she is.
Anyway.
Yeah, Brad.
No, she's bonkers eyes. Okay. yeah, right. Yeah.
She made a movie called Bonkers Eyes.
No,
right?
No. I mean, she's beautiful, but her eyes are bonkers. Anyway. She was the bad guy in Batman. I know who you're talking about.
She was the what?
She was the bad guy in Batman.
You're really hanging on by a thread here. I'm you barely saved it with hanging on a bad guy in Batman. I mean, yeah, that's who she is.
Yeah,
okay.
But like, you don't expect her to be funny. Were there other actors that like really surprised you? Where you're like, oh man, this is not. These people are not.
Yeah,
like,
so many. I mean, that's always the best surprise. That was the best thing about her. She had literally just won an Oscar.
Yeah,
and she came into a meeting at Funny or Die. First of all. That's how cool she is. She took a meeting at a website called Funny or Die, and she's that serious of an actress.
Awesome.
And she came in, she was like, I'm just, you know, I'm so sick of being so serious, and I get all these drama roles, and everyone wants me to be sad all the time and do this drama. She's like, I just want to do something crazy. And we were like, because we weren't even going to pitch Forehead to Taze. And we were like, oh, you want something crazy? And I pitched her the idea. I mean, Seth Morris wrote that, and he wasn't in the meeting. And I remember being like, if I see an opening, I'm going to pitch that for us to do with her.
Right.
And we pitched her Forehead to Taste. And she was like, yes, that's what I want to do.
Oh, my
God. And the only reason to this day that I think she did it is because her publicist was late to the meeting. And I think her publicist would have shut that down.
Yeah, dude.
Wow.
So her publicist showed up at the end, and we were like, well, we have an idea. We're going to do it. And she was like, what's the idea? We're like, it's called Forehead Tits. And her publicist was like, what? And Marion was like, it's wonderful. It's crazy. I want to do it. And like,
it's called Forehead Tits.
Little magic things like that can happen.
Timing is everything.
And by the way, it's like, it's a joke about little boobs on a forehead, but we kind of do it in a smarter way than it, I mean, there's a much worse version of that.
Yeah, sure.
So there's a little trust that she's giving us to do it. But, like, I love that video. I'm very proud of that video. It's a funny, stupid little video. But anyway, I don't even remember how
Mike and Dave. So then you're like, you're leafing through and you're like, so this is great. This is my
great,
world.
This is great, and do that. So they see a reel. And you know, I think. I don't know. I feel like this business does work in a way where there can be, like, you can have a moment where, whether you deserve it or not, you're like, this is the next guy, like, to either, this is the, someone who's going to get a chance to direct a movie. This is the next guy who deserves to star in a movie. Like,
Adam.
It starts to run. Yeah. Adam. Exactly. And so I had kind of gotten a movie. We didn't get to make it. And it was kind of like, I think maybe I was on a list of like, hey, this is a comedy director who, like, he should make a movie.
He's going to be big. So he's going to get a chance.
Yeah,
so
you
got
to tell that lie to try to get the job. Yeah. But I went in. I met with the producers. Chernin produced it. I met with David Reddy and Jenna Topping and the guys over there.
I know Jenna Ruo. She did The Heat.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And Chernin is fantastic, by the way. Yeah. And I just had a good meeting with them. And I said, I love the script. And, you know, I see it like this. And I love these jokes. And I want to do this with it. And I think it should look like this and feel like this. And I guess it went well. Because then they were like, all right, we like Jake. Let's have him go meet with Fox. So then I had to go do that meeting with Fox, where they brought me into Fox. And Chernin basically said, we want Jake for this. We like what he said. So let's go to Fox and talk to them. And then you got to go get approved by Fox. And then all of a sudden you're like, all right, I'm attached to this movie. And then, like, that, you know, means nothing in this town until you actually make it.
Right.
So you can be attached to so many things. And then we started trying to, I gave my notes on the script. I worked with the writers. We started working on that. And then we tried to get cast attached. And Zach was the first person I met with about that. And he had read the script and we had a meeting and we were like, he was like, wait a minute. I know you. How do we know? I was like, years ago we did the silly little short. It was like, I had done this Funny or Die short with him called Zac Efron's Pool Party. And it's a very, again, guerrilla style, hold the camera.
Dude, so funny, though. Thomas Lennon and Nicole Sullivan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know, I guess I technically don't know if Zach likes that video, if he hates that video. Maybe I shouldn't mention that video. But he was like, oh, yeah, I remember. I mean, this was like, we had done it like 6-7 years before. You know what I mean?
Really
early on. And he was like, oh, dude, I love that video. He goes, I made that video, and that was like, people thought that video was cool. That was like one of the first times people were like, oh, hey, man, that video was really cool. Like, it was like,
the High School Musical
Disney
kid.
He was, and I could tell right then, I was like, oh, he's going to be in. And by the way, we had a great talk, and Zach is one of the best guys, and he and I get along really, really well, and I love him a lot. And so we had a great talk about the movie and the idea for it and the brother relationships, and he was into it. And so we got Zach, and then I think we got Anna next, and then we got Adam, and then we got Aubrey, and it just like kind of all came together with four awesome leads. And then – because, you know, you're also dealing with it like, hey, we're starting to cast it. So, Fox, will you make this movie with these people? You know what I mean? And then they're like, okay, yes, we'll make that
movie. So once you decide, once you meet with everybody and go, this is who I want, then you have to present that.
Yes, and kind of say, like, here's who we're meeting with. Here's, okay, I'm the director, and here's who I want in it, and do you approve that? And I mean, there's a cliche about it is so hard to get a movie made, and I have learned how true that is because it can fall apart at any moment. Because I can get the job, I can be attached as a director, and then it can fall apart because we never get anyone attached.
Sure.
We can get people attached, and then it can fall apart because of budget, or fall apart because the script doesn't come together, or
they want to bring in their own director. I'll work with that guy.
A cast schedule can change, and all of a sudden they're not available for a week, and that's the week you have production set up, and then all of a sudden that throws, like, literally someone deciding, like, I need to go to a wedding this weekend can shut a whole movie down. Like, it's that delicate.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean?
That's insane.
So the whole idea that, you know, a good producer will do is just keep the train rolling, keep the wheels rolling, and like, it's like, okay, we need to do another pass on the script to get everyone approved. Okay, but you're not going to stop everything and just do a pass on the script. You do that while you're doing 10 other things because you just got to keep that train moving. And that's not what I do, really. You know, that's what a producer does. But I've, you know, Chernin is a group of very good producers, and they kept that train moving. And I read the script at the end of 2014, and we were shooting by May 2015, and that's insanely fast.
That's impressive.
For everything to come together.
Yeah.
And now it's coming out, you know, July 8th, 2016. And it's like, in Hollywood time, I think that's very fast. It's very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got very lucky.
This whole time, because this is your first major motion picture, is it daunting? Is it scary? Or has your time at Funny or Die, SNL, like, you're kind of like, do you did you feel like, yes, I'm ready for this and I could do this? Or was it like, oh, my God, I can't believe they're giving me the keys to this car?
Both. Everything. All of the above.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, yeah, it's like yeah, I want to do this. I can do this. And I have ideas I know can work in this. And then at the same time, you're doing it on a level that you've never done it before.
Yeah.
And it is different. Like, when you're on a big budget movie, the amount of people that work there and the process that you go through and the politics of the studio and the way the unions work with how you can do this, like, you've never worked in that way before, so you do have to figure out how
you were
to
doing
match.
Guerrilla style shots at Funny or Die, and now you have a budget to do
ATV
stunts.
We'd be on set where we had like 45 minutes left in our day, and I'd be like, oh, cool, let's go grab these two shots. And people would be like, no, we're just going to cut early because we can never get another shot. And I'd be like, what are you talking about? We got 45 minutes, let's get another shot. And they're like, that'll never happen. Like, we got to take this, we got to move that truck, these guys have to pack up, they're going to do that. And like, I was like, oh man, I'm not used to this world. You know what I mean?
So
like,
you're like, just bring the camera over here and shoot it.
Yeah,
I
was
like,
literally like,
no.
Why don't we grab the camera,
right,
we have the light, and let's just go shoot it. Like,
someone will make us a sandwich.
You know what I mean? And by the way, everyone's doing a really good job at doing what they do, and it's just getting used to everyone working together.
So many more pieces, right?
So many more pieces to that puzzle. So there's definitely absolutely nervousness in getting used to that and making sure I'm doing enough work in preparation for that. And
how involved were you with the – I remember being on tour with Adam at that point when he had screen tested, I think, and then we're – you know, every night he's like – waiting to hear, and he'd, you know, walk out, take phone calls, and seeing like, oh, it's between, I think, him and Ike Barinholtz, maybe, right?
Yeah, but the Ike had screen tested as well.
Okay.
Both were great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like, we had to do screen tests. Cause,
yeah.
And by the way, that wasn't about, like, who's the funniest set it up, but like, it was so important to me. Like, this is about brothers, like, who's got the best chemistry with Zach. Like, let's see that together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I remember Adam too then made a video one night, we were in DC, of, you know, these 2,500 seat theaters, and he did a video with the whole crowd in the background chanting
Mike and Dave.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my
and
God,
I'm
that
sure
was
that,
the best video to get.
Right? And it was like, I don't know what, I mean, just seeing that
he had just screen tested. He really wanted the role of Mike. We hadn't got back to him yet. And this was like the day or two after or something like that.
Yeah.
And he was on tour and he made the whole crowd chant, Mike and Dave, Mike and Dave. And he recorded it and he's in the mic going, I'm going to be Mike.
Yeah.
I can feel it. Will you help me? And they were going nuts. And he sent that to us and we were like, this is fucking awesome. And by the way, it's like,
it gave me chills watching him, man, because I was like, oh, I feel like in that moment, I was like, oh, there's no way they can say no to that.
Yeah. And, well, and by the way, you know what the coolest part about that was it was like, oh, he really wants it.
Yeah.
Like he is committed to that. Like, we already knew he was hilarious and he was going to get the
part. Yeah, at that point, ability's not an issue, right?
Yeah. But it was just like, oh man, he will put his all into this.
Yeah.
And that was like, by the way, what I was doing. And it's so cool to be like, well, I'll have a partner going in 100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know someone who's going to be thrilled to it, not just like, all right, so I'll knock this movie out right before I do this other project.
Yeah.
Like, someone who's actually passionate about it. And Adam and I have seen the movie, and
we went to the UCLA campus.
Yeah.
Oh, that's where we saw you there.
Yeah, I saw you there.
Yeah.
Showed up
and
at the end of that.
We both walked out of that going, all right, Adam Devine is going to be a star now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, we see that movie as, I mean, granted, Zach is obviously amazingly talented, and he's been doing.
And he's already a star.
Like,
yes.
And he's already a star. Adam's very successful and very famous, but we saw that movie. We're like, okay, this is the Adam Devine coming out party. I'm a movie star. I'm a comedy heavyweight.
And you know what? He doesn't get, but like, that doesn't, that you know, perspective doesn't, isn't formed unless the whole movie like delivers.
Right.
And it was like, dude, we like laughed out loud so many times. We are in comedy so hard, and like, just that it, you know, unfortunately, it's a blessing and a curse, and Brad can attest, you get so overly critical when you see, I'm sure you're the same way.
Oh, same way.
And when I was able to sit back and like enjoy it and like not have it, like I didn't have any sort of like critical, I was just able to sit back and enjoy it. And dude, I was like, man, it's so tough to make a comedy these days, and it was like one of the best comedies I've seen in a long time.
Oh,
yeah.
Thanks, man.
So,
thanks.
And I have no doubt in my mind that people are going to feel the same way.
It's so exciting.
Yeah.
Well, honestly, that's been the coolest part about this, is doing those screenings, like a couple college screenings that we did, and they're doing some free screenings across the country right now to let people see it and get the word of mouth out. And it's so fun for me watching it with an audience. It's the best thing. Like, because I mean, that's what you guys have. You get up and do stand-up. You get that
instant feedback
from the audience.
Yeah.
I'm trapped in an edit room for 6 months trying to put this together, going like, oh, do we pick that joke? Do we pick this joke? Hopefully it works. I love sitting down and watching it with an audience. And we've been so lucky, but we've been doing this free screening tour, right, all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got the report yesterday, and the feedback from people out of these screenings is 99% positive. It's crazy. Wow, it's like insane. It's something insanely high that like
and for a comedy
for that Fox has had. Like right. I think it's like so gratifying to like you know I love the movie. I love the actors in it. I think everyone did such a good job, and I think we genuinely surprised people with it and like get some surprising laughs out of there. We have some big funny scenes and like.
Kumail scene is one of the greatest scenes in a comedy movie ever.
Everyone's going to be talking about it.
And that's, I mean, we can't talk about it because then we'll spoil it.
You know who Kumail Nanjiani is?
Yes, that guy, when his scene, unbelievable. Just
it's so funny.
So,
he plays a spa masseuse and has one of the greatest, I mean, it's just,
people,
how fun
more
was
people
that
coming out talking about that scene than almost any other
How
scene.
Fun was that to cut?
It was. I mean, we had a version of it that was like three times longer.
Of course, you did.
Of course,
and guess what?
So much,
I would have
so
loved
fun.
It.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I remember we showed some people like a 5-minute version of that scene, and they were like, "I mean, what do you cut?"
Wow.
They were like, "I mean, it's a classic. What are you gonna do?" I mean, and that scene is now like 34 seconds long, and literally there was like 5 minutes of it that was just so fun.
But kind
of,
I mean, and almost it's. I guess it is sometimes like less is more thing, right? Like you see. I mean,
leave one a little more.
Yeah, so much punch in that you're like, I could have watched.
It's funny, but you shouldn't be able to go out, have a bathroom break, grab a little more goobers, and then come back and the scene's still going on. I mean, but now and
Sam was great. Richardson,
Sam Richardson,
he was here before he went out. And,
our like quote unquote secondary cast is unbelievable. Like Mary Holland, Sam Richardson, Sugarland Beard, plays Jeannie, the sister, is like a killer in
and Alice, which Alice, you know, it was so funny because you know I put myself on tape with Adam. I don't know if you ever saw that tape.
My
to play
role that disappeared. It turned into a female role.
Mm-hmm. And it was so funny because I remember putting it on tape. We were in Vancouver.
Oh, was that the cousin role, the sister role?
Yeah. What?
The cousin role.
Yeah. Okay.
And I remember putting on tape and being like, all right, well, I can't have a better chance to get it if I have the star of the movie in this. And it was also like the way the part was, I was like, all right, this is very much up my alley.
Yeah.
And then when they were like, oh, we're rewriting it for, you know, it's going to be a girl. And I was like, all right, well, you know, I can't do anything about that. And then I see it and I'm like, it should be that. Like, she crushed it. It was way funnier. There was more. To
feel like you haven't seen it before with it being a woman in that role.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, and I remember walking out with you and you were saying that. And that's like, okay, the fact that Adam was up for the role, it got switched to a female. He saw the part and then goes, yeah, that's better. For people to get an idea of what that is, that's like you see your ex who you love with someone else. You go, you know what? They deserve each other more.
She's happy. She's happier.
Like, that doesn't happen.
That is. That's rare. That's rare.
Well, I'm selfish.
That's actually the highest compliment I could get.
Oh, good.
Actually, that's, you're right about that.
Yeah.
And that being said, you know, just that wasn't the right part. But the next movie, that's, you know.
And just the fact that this cast is, it's weird saying they're young when I know some of them are in their, like, mid-30s. But comedy-wise, like, there really isn't, like, that elder statesman role of like that person that's on set that can be like, okay, this is how you do a comedy movie. Like, it's a lot of kids having fun.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, I mean, I obviously, again, I'm a comedy nerd. I'm from the comedy world. Yeah. I like comedians. I want to work with comedy. You know what I mean? It's never as fun trying to make someone who's not really funny try to get them to funny on set. And luckily, I never had that problem. Amen. You know what I mean? Everyone in our cast is funny.
Sure.
It'd be hilarious. And I would work with all of them again. But that was so fun for me to oh, God.
And in Hawaii.
And they make me, you know, and then I'm laughing all day. Like, I'm also a big believer. Like, I came up because of Funny or Die. I got really lucky. I got to, you know, shadow Adam McKay as he made some of his movies and see him make Step Brothers and see him make The Other Guys. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, McKay is, like, the best mentor in the world to have.
He would go to set and
and hang out.
How was the Step Brothers experience?
Oh, so fun. I mean, that was like, I couldn't believe it. I was making videos in my apartment. I got hired to work at Funny or Die. They start production on a movie named Step Brothers. I get to go down and visit set. He threw me in the movie for a line. He was like, hey, we need someone to do this. You want to come in? Like, McKay is the coolest, smartest, chillest.
What did you take from him in your, what did you take that you learned from McKay that you brought to Mike and Dave New Wedding
Dates? Everything. I'm just not as good of a version as he can do it.
You're just doing an Adam McKay impression.
I mean, literally, Funny or Die, in the early days, Adam and Will and Chris were there all the time because we were in their office. And they weren't, like, before they were making a movie, they were just around and they were working on their new website that they started. Mm-hmm. And I really consider those early days and then getting to see McKay make Step Brothers and The Other Guys, like, kind of my second film school. Like, I went to film school and then seeing how those guys made comedies, I was like, oh, this is how you do it. Like, the way that they use improvisation on set, but you always get what's on the script, and it's doing, I mean, anyone can kind of say a bunch of crazy lines, but doing improv, McKay is so smart about it, and he does it in a way where you can actually use all the takes. You know what I mean? Like, it's actually a slightly different skill. Like, a lot of people can be like, let's try some crazy stuff, but to do it in a way where you're thinking about how the scene cuts together and know, yeah, but let's get this intro, and okay, we did these improv, so I need to get a slightly different take of this over here, like, because you want to have all the options in the edit room. Like, seeing that way to construct something, I was like, oh, that's the way to try to do it. And they always have fun on set. It's always a fun set, and I was like, oh, this is the way to make a comedy. If you're having a good time on set, it shows up in the movie. Like, you don't want to be having a miserable time and screaming with a producer you don't like, and
right.
and the writer's an asshole and and then like try to go be funny and make a comedy that
it
way.
It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Yeah, the same way I don't want a waitress at the comedy club to come back and yell at me for going too long the first show, and then I like messed up her tip situation, and now all of a sudden now I gotta go be funny.
I'm a big believer in, like, you want everyone on that set to get it's a no asshole policy. That's what I learned from McKay. You have a no asshole policy on
just
set,
much like my sex life.
Yes.
No asshole policy.
Wow.
Maybe that's what he meant.
Very strict.
Very strict. And by the way, I think that goes from catering all on up to the cast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And by the way, and that's the other thing, McKay is so smart, and he can do it all himself a million times over, and at the same time, he's so gracious, and like, if the crafty guy has a joke that's good, let's try that joke.
It's what?
Absolutely. I mean,
he doesn't just ask him. The crafty guy has shown that he's kind of funny maybe up until that point.
No, I mean, I just think he's like, when they're in the mode, I mean, when I showed up at Funny or Die, when they hired me at Funny or Die, I think like one of the first days there, they were like, hey man, yeah, we want to try to make these videos. We're working on this. Here's a script called Step Brothers. We're going to try to make this movie. If you got any joke ideas, let us know. And I was like, I'm a 25-year-old idiot. What are you asking me for? But like, that's the kind of thing of like, it's an all hands on deck situation. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, McKay and Will don't need other people tell them their jokes. Like, they're the best at it.
Having that open mind and very collaborative.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they came from SNL. McKay was head writer there, and I think it's, you know, that's a team effort type thing. And
so do you think
he knows how to lead a group that way?
Do you think being a great director then, I mean, you have to, like you were saying, McKay being able to have the foresight to, like, in the moment, just see and envision so much stuff. You have to be able to have that compartmentalized.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how he does. I mean, also, like, I got to see him. I stopped by for a day when they were doing Anchorman 2.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I got to stop by because this is, like, history in the making.
Oh, my God.
And McKay's, you know, on the microphone yelling out lines for people, and he's yelling out lines for Will, for Steve Carell, for Paul Rudd, for Dave Koechner, and he's perfectly in voice of each of those characters, just going from one to the next. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not just a joke that any one of them can say. Everyone's a joke that's perfect for that character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And those guys are comedic geniuses in that movie, and you see them coming out, and they're like, I've worked on a couple joke ideas of my own here, and they're all great. And then McKay will just kind of suggest a couple things, and it's like, God damn, McKay. He just improvised something, and it's better than what I was working on for an hour. You know what I mean? Like, he's the best.
Now, do you see a guy like McKay, who moved into drama and doing The Big Short, do you see that, and is that something that you would eventually want to do, or are you kind of like, I'm going to stick to comedy for a while?
Oh, I don't. I mean, I'm not interested in doing comedy just to do it. But I mean, if you know McKay, you know that like he's interested in that stuff. Like he was following and talking about the financial crisis. Like, I don't think the lesson there is if you do comedy, try to do drama just to do it. But it's like, I think the lesson there is like, oh, always follow your interest. Like, what you're interested in is and what you're passionate about, to make stuff about that. And so I have I went to film school. Like, I studied a lot of different kinds of stuff. Like, I actually worked a little in the documentary world too. Like, I always have, like, I'm like, oh, I kind of want to just go off and do a documentary and do that
kind of
stuff.
Probably why you made such a good fake one.
Yeah, 7 Days in Hell was actually very gratifying for me because I have so many documentary ideas I want to follow. I never have the time to do it. Mm-hmm. Like, getting to make a fake one was fun. So I have some stuff like that, but I think it's like I've been so lucky to be able to work on stuff that I enjoy working on with people I enjoy working with.
Yeah.
So right now I'm just kind of like, well, I just want to keep that going. And I don't really care if it's a big movie, a small movie, a documentary. It's more like, well, if I can keep doing what I like doing with people I like doing it with, I'm living the dream.
You mentioned getting to do that with Dana. Is there somebody that else is like on the list? Even though, like, again, like, if But like, there's besides, we all have like
besides Brad Williams. I mean, that's just like how every comic has to say Carlin Pryor is an influence. Like for me,
besides
Brad Williams.
I you know want to get to a point to where you know I'm opposite Tom Hanks in something because right. that would just
Hanks is the best.
Come yeah. on, and it's like Gump's like one of my favorite, and Jim Carrey like Dumb and Dumber is my favorite movie of all time.
It's the best.
But also Will, but like you know, there's just guys. So like, I'm sure you have.
I don't want to jinx it, guys. No, I mean, right. by the way, right. Will, it's like, Will, I've gotten to shoot a lot with him and have fun with him and shoot sketches and those Durango commercials I did with him. Yeah. And like, those are all fun, but like, oh my God, I'd love to make a movie with him. That's yeah. like the best thing in the world because he's the nicest, best, funniest guy.
That's wow. so awesome.
You know what I mean?
Too.
Like,
when
so
Mike
sure.
and Dave Need Wedding Dates goes and is a hit.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, I'm there sure. you go. If a studio will let me make another movie, I will try
I can't
that.
See why they wouldn't, man. It was fucking incredible.
Well, honestly, it means a lot. Like, the other thing is, like, coming from a comedy world, like, you guys yeah. are saying, like, you're harder on comedy.
Yeah,
so
we are.
It's weird to say because we had so many jokes in the movie, but I come out of that going, like, oh, man, I hope it's funny. Is it funny? Is it – because it's like, am I – you see it 1,000 times. It stops being funny to you.
Sure.
And the fact that an audience of people who aren't in the business can watch it and love it, but that I can show it to comedians, too, and still get laughs yep. there, like, yeah. that means a lot to me that you guys
are good. Oh, God, the yeah. The Kumail scene killed me. Yeah. The crying scene.
Oh yeah, that was fun.
It's just there's a story.
The crying scene.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
And by the way, that's a classic example of the earliest note was cut the crying. Cut the crying. Get rid of the yeah. crying. Let's keep it emotional. Get rid of the crying. And I'm like, no, I know. Like, look, I know I just showed you a 9-minute version of that scene, and there's too much crying. I agree yes. with that. But I really believe there's a version of this that we can do the emotion
yeah.
and have a crying joke in it.
Yes.
And then I can give both. And
yes.
So like, I remember that was ones that for a long time the note was cut the crying.
Note from who now?
Crying. From, I mean, networks, everybody. I mean, I think the producers. Studio wanted to see it, the producers. I think my editors were like, let's try. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I know this is crazy, but let's keep the crying. And then it was just finding the right version of crying. Where
right.
like, we can do the emotion in that scene, but I want to be able to make people
still
laugh.
Still make
in the
it be funny.
You got both.
Because there's also a lot of comedies now that they just kind of like, you know, every third scene, it stops being a comedy and it gets really serious.
Yeah,
and
right.
I was like, oh, my goal is to have a couple of those scenes where you do the story and you get serious, but you still get a joke or two in
yes,
there. And
yes.
to not sell out the other one. You're not, the joke doesn't ruin the emotion in it, and the emotion doesn't ruin the joke.
It's a hard
in
balance
if you can
to do.
Try to do that. And I feel like we did that a couple times.
You totally
movie,
did.
Definitely so. The crying scene. And see, I don't see why you have to take the joke out, because those are some of the most powerful jokes, because that those are the ones you're not expecting.
And they hit
when,
harder. Yeah.
When you're wound up so tight in the emotion of the scene, then when you let it go and release it with a joke, it's going to be so much more powerful.
I totally agree.
And, yeah, like Zac Efron and Adam Devine were both on Conan recently.
Last night I was
yeah,
there. They were great.
Last night.
They talked about the crying scene.
Yeah,
it was
and
awesome.
They talked about it, and they said, like, they said on Conan, right, they initially tried to play it for real, but then, like, they found out that they both cry so ridiculous that they're so like, oh, so we have to make this comedy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because like when they would do crying, it wasn't like Daniel Day-Lewis crying right. like that. It was just
big slaughter.
Yeah. Just
yes. Also, you mentioned the story, like the story being so strong was just like very imperative. And like, because it was like I was invested from the get-go, and then it was just like, so everything made sense in context. And even like, you know, them meeting with girls like was like all
yeah,
and then
yeah.
the way they met, it was just like and Zach and Adam's chemistry too, like
it's
like you
charts.
Said off the charts. It's like a younger
I believe
updated
that I know they're not brothers, I believe they're brothers.
Dude, it's like a very, it's like a Spade Farley. Efron's such a great straight man to Adam's shenanigans,
and he can still be hilarious too.
Totally.
Like, he can do both.
Totally.
That's
which he does in
so
the crying
about
scene.
Zach. Yeah, he's so funny. But he can play a scene so real that the stakes get raised, and then he can make a joke and let other people make a joke that makes it so much funnier.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like I lucked out with that cast. Like, I got the best cast in the world. I'd work with all of them again. I want to make a million movies with those guys. I'd make anything with Adam.
Should.
I want to go make comedies with him.
They're
the best. Anna, Aubrey, Zach. If I could only make movies with them for the rest of the movies I make,
that's
would
a
not,
win.
I would not be upset.
Hell yeah.
Awesome,
well, and if there is a sequel, let's maybe put some feelers out to Robin Yount to see if he can play. Maybe he can play Marin's boss at the bar.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. They can have dueling mustaches.
Hey, you're going to keep talking to these liquor salesmen, or you're going to open up Younties?
Done.
Younties.
We're in. Right now, if you came to me and said, like, all right, it's down between you and Robin Yount, I'd be like, well, you got to go with Yount. I mean, I of
and
course
you didn't
I
even know who he was before today.
Yeah. No, and
how
now
dare you.
And now the legend of Robin Yount has grown on me so much. He's comedy royalty in my eyes.
So July 8th.
July 8th.
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. It's look, I'm just like, I've been working on it so long for this point. I'm just excited for people to see it.
Right?
Sure.
I'm just like, all I want is for it to be out there, and if you want to, go buy a ticket. And I truly believe, I'm not just saying this, it is a fantastic theater experience. The way to watch it is surrounded
absolutely
by a bunch of other people,
absolutely,
and the laughter's contagious, and there's screams, there's shocks. Like, it's a really fun crowd experience.
I love that point you're making, because people can sleep on going to the theater to see, like, comedies,
yeah,
because they're like, oh, I can watch it on my home or on my laptop. Fuck,
no.
Avatar is what I should see in the theater. No, man, like what you just said, you need that collective, seeing a comedy in the theater when there's people. When I saw MacGruber Super Stone at a midnight screening,
oh, yeah,
and there was a lot of people there, I'm sure I was, me being high had something to do with it, but the collective, everyone laughing, it was such a visceral experience to be with strangers all,
yeah,
loving something together. And
sure,
you have so many big laugh out loud moments. And
well, just think of a stand-up
comedy club.
Yeah. Yes. Just think of a comedy club show. Like, do you want to go to the Sunday night show that has, you know, 17 people in it? I mean, don't get me wrong, please come to the Sunday night show. But like, or do you want to go to the Saturday 10
yeah
p.m. show that's
yeah
just rowdy and crazy and the jokes just hit that much harder?
And it's a different experience.
It absolutely is.
And that's,
so,
I
yeah
really
go
believe we have
theater
that in that movie. Like, it's a crowd experience if you can get to it. To
hell
to
yes
the theater, yeah.
Badass, man.
Well, thanks for doing your, I think, first podcast.
Thanks for popping my podcast cherry.
This
guys
was amazing.
No problem.
I'm glad you made time.
Was it okay? Like, I know when you pop a cherry, you kind of have to go easy, but
I don't know,
we kind of went for a long time.
I'm probably
so
going to have some regrets later. right now, I think we're in line.
July 8th, Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates. Go see it.
Thanks, guys.
I'm talking to you, Yount.
Robin Yount, if you see this movie, call me.
What if he tweets
you
it?
You don't even have to like it. Oh, like, he's on Twitter. There's no way he's on Twitter.
Oh, God. All right,
he's
well,
getting his mustache trimmed.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.